The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
I had a nutty morning this morning. This morning I went to bed a little late. I'm trying very hard to get all this material together for you. So I was up pretty late last night. And I got up this morning and I couldn't find my glasses. Now for years, you know where you put your glasses. And my glass is not there. Okay, so there's always like that second place that it might be. So I went there. Maybe I left it by my computer last night, because when I work with my computer, I can't read with my glasses. I take them off when I read. So I'm at the computer, so maybe it's by I can't find the glasses. Well, thank God that inspired me to clean up my desk. So I cleaned up my desk in honor of that, but still didn't find my glasses. So I'm thinking, well, maybe it was because, you know, before I went to sleep, I had a drink of water. Is it possible I put it down? And I'm going nuts trying to find my glasses. Then I get my son looking for my glasses, okay? He can't find my glasses. Now I'm thinking, it must be my granddaughter. My granddaughter got to my glasses, and they're somewhere in her diapers, okay? So I'm looking all over for my glasses. Now my son's looking for my glasses. We've got flashlights looking under the beds, and I can't figure it out. So finally I say, well, okay, you know, the new glasses, so I'm sure I can find my old glasses. I found the old glasses, but now I can't see. But at least I've got glasses. All right, so I can't figure this out. Where could my glasses be? Okay? So as I'm about to leave, I say to my wife, I say, Chana, keep your eyes open for my glasses, because I can't figure them out. And as I'm looking at her, I'm saying, you know, those glasses that she just bought, that she thinks look a little too big, don't look big at all, right? In fact, they kind of look like mine. And I'm looking at her saying, you know, so if you see my glasses, so, you know, and I looked at her and said, you know what? I found my glasses. She says, where are they? They're on your face. She says, no, they're not. And she takes off the glasses. She says, that's why I've had a headache all morning. And she calls over to the optician because her glasses aren't working, because she's wearing my glasses. I said, this is out of the Three Stooges. And there's only two of us. I went totally nuts trying to find my glasses. Anyways, I found my glasses. Now I have a headache. Okay, anyways. Looking for Hashem is like looking for your glasses. It has nothing to do with it, but I thought it has to fit. You got to get the story in there. Now, but really, when you're looking for Hashem, you're looking for the power of looking. Right? That's what you're looking for. Right? You're looking for the power of seeing. That's really what you're looking for. Because Hashem is the source of all seeing. You're not the source of all seeing. Right? So if you look at your second source over here, it's actually right before the number two. This is from the Rambam, Maimonides. And Maimonides teaches this. An idea that shocked me, because I saw this idea, and I can't say that they're similar, I just saw this thinking in Eastern tradition. Then when I saw the Rambam say this, I said, whoa, what do you do with this? And again, I cannot and I do not assume that what the Rambam meant and what Eastern tradition means are the same. I don't really personally care. What I care about is just finding the truth about who we are and what we're part of and what we can do about that. So the Rambam over here, just before the number two, says he, referring to Hashem, is the knower, the object of knowledge, and the knowledge itself. Right? Now that's not true about you and me. Right? I might be the knower, but I'm not the knowing. Right? I operate a process of knowing, but I'm not the knowing. And I'm certainly not the knowledge. Right? So if I'm looking at this bottle, so the bottle is the object of my knowledge, I'm employing the power of knowing, and I'm the knower that's using the power of knowing to know that. But that's not true about Hashem. Because in my case, these are three different entities, the knower, the knowing, and the knowledge itself. Okay? But when it comes to Hashem, Hashem is the knower, Hashem is the knowing, and Hashem is the knowledge. What do we mean by that? So I've mentioned to you before, One of the big confusions that people have about God is that they think that Hashem is a being floating in outer space over there. Some of you might have heard me share, they say that the first Russian astronaut, when he went into outer space, they asked him, "What do you see?" And he said, "I don't see God." Right? That was my Russian accent. Right? "I don't see God." Okay? So, I mean, what did he think he'd see? Did he think suddenly he'd be driving in a spaceship and go, "Oh my God, it's God!" And he'd see this huge, big eyes peering at him. "Hi, what took you so long?" I mean, what did he think he would see? You think you're going to see God? You're going to see the source of seeing? You're going to think about the source of thinking? Who did he think he'd see? So most people think that Hashem is an object, just like any object, that one can think about. But you can't think about Hashem like I think about you or I think about a bottle or a table or a chair. Because when I'm thinking about a bottle or a table or a chair, I'm the knower, the subject, and the chair is the object that I'm knowing. Okay? But we're talking about the source of all consciousness. When we talk about God, we're talking about the source of all consciousness. So Hashem cannot be an object of my mind when in fact I'm really an object of His mind. Okay? Because He's the knower. Right? He's the source of knowing. So Hashem is the subject, not the object. Okay? So this is the way it would be hinted at in Hasidic mystical thought. Our relation to God is similar to the relation between an idea to your mind. In other words, right now, I want you to imagine, create a completely new person in your mind. Not somebody you know. Right? So that person was created by you. Where does that person exist? In your mind. Okay? And would it be correct to now say there's you in that person? Does that person have an independent existence that now he adds up, there's now you in that person? No, because that person is just an expression of you. He's not you, you're not him or her, right? But on the other hand, where does that person exist? Completely within you. Now let's say you gave that person in your mind a piece of your mind, okay? Without it getting angry about it, right? But you're going to give this person a piece of your mind so that this person in your mind now suddenly becomes self-aware. So suddenly this person in your mind, this is totally out of like Matrix or so, this is totally science fiction, right? Suddenly this person in your mind wakes up and becomes self-conscious, begins to ask these questions. Who am I? Where am I? Why am I? Right? How did I get here? Who was my creator? Now imagine he starts trying to find you somewhere in outer space. Where does he find you? Remember, you're his context. You're his source. You're his ground. You're his essence. How does he find you? Do you get the point? All right? How does he find you? He finds you by experiencing himself as an expression of you. He finds you by experiencing the very mystery, the enigma of knowing it all. Where does this knowing come from? How is it that I know myself? How does I know you? Where does the power of knowing come from? Does it come from my brain? I remember years ago, I was at someone's home, they gave the first course. It was Friday night, didn't look like a filter fish, right? Didn't have a little carrot on top of it, right? So it wasn't like a filter fish. Then again, didn't look like chopped liver. So I said, well, what is this? So my guest told me that this is called cervelle. So I said, oh, sounds French. What is cervelle? He says, it's brain. I went, brain, right? I was eating brain. It was kosher brain. Don't worry, salted. I mean, kosher brain, but brain. So I suddenly had this experience of brain on my plate. Right? Cutting away, doing a lobotomy. Right? You know, here must be memory. I mean, you know, like, you're eating brain. So then I suddenly began to think about my own brain. I started to think, do you really think that all the wisdom, consciousness, right, all the knowing, seeing, hearing is in this little slab of blob of fleshy stuff on your plate? Of course, it's not a human brain. I don't think. think about that. Right? Do we actually think, I'm told, I don't know if it's true, that somebody has Einstein's brain in a jar, that they bought it. You get it on eBay? Maybe I should sell my brain on eBay. I wonder if I could get anything for my brain. I don't know. How do they sell brain? By the pound. I mean, it's unbelievable. So now, do you really think, there you are, you know, can you imagine you're walking to someone's house and you're in the kitchen, you open up the thing, there's gefilte fish, you know, there's some pickles, and then you see this jar that says, Einstein brain. This must be interesting. You know, like, do you really think that the brilliance of Einstein is in his brain? Do you think you're in your brain? We're not in our brain. We're in Hashem's mind, so to speak, metaphorically. And your soul is a piece of Hashem's mind, so to speak. Right? That's as best as we can talk. It's poetry. It's just suggesting the truth that's beyond words. And therefore, Hashem is the knower, right? And I am the knowledge. But since Hashem is the knower, the knowing and the knowledge, I'm one with Hashem. I'm completely one with Hashem right now. I only have one problem. Right? I don't really believe that. Because if I really, really believe that, right? You'd be in a state of ecstasy. I would stop taking drugs. I'm just joking. I would not stop taking drugs. Drugs is much better than that. No. You know, if you really believe that, if you really believe that every move you're making right now, now you understand the real meaning of that verse, right? 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 Every move you make, every breath you take, I'll be watching you. It's true. Right? You know where this verse comes from. No, it's not. It's David HaMelech. We call him Sting. The Jewish boy. Sting. Yes, it's true. Hashem is watching you right now, just like you're watching that man in your mind. But your very watching him is what's creating him and sustaining him and animating him. So too, every move you make, every breath you take, it's because I'm watching you, right? And the problem is, do we know this? Do we cognate this? Do we live a lifestyle that is expressive and acknowledging that truth? The more you live it, the more you believe it, the more you believe it, the more you'll experience it, and the more you'll experience it, the happier you'll be, right? But as long as you think you're just a piece of dust floating in outer space, and that Hashem is some big, huge, super being over there, you could never be happy with that. Because what connection do I have with that superpower? But right now, you have to understand, He is the knower. Right? And your knowing is really tapping into His knowing. Right? You're just tapping into the knowing. Right? And you are the knowledge. Right? And Hashem is the knower, He is the knowing, and He is the knowledge. Okay? So you are completely one with Hashem. But you're not Hashem, because you're just the knowledge. He's the knower, the knowing, and the knowledge, right? So that's why I have to be very careful. You're not Hashem, but Hashem is completely one with you. And the more you realize that Hashem is completely one with you, and the more you just experience, just take time to just marvel over the ability to marvel, right? Then that itself is an experience of Hashem in your life. And that's incredibly empowering. Incredibly empowering. Okay? So that goes back to what we said. Keter, when a person gets a glimpse, a taste, an influx, a downpour of the manifestation of Hashem through the attribute of Keter, right? That is an experience of that deep, mysterious I-ness, the ability to say, I am, which is the most ridiculous thing, yet I am. Right? And a lot of people still are struggling with, am I? I am. Right? And just the very fact that I exist should just blow me away every moment of my life. And I should be so filled with thankfulness. That's why there's an amazing verse in Lamentations, Echa. Here Jeremiah is bemoaning. Bemoaning is no word. Bewailing. There's nothing to describe the devastation of what's happened to the Jewish people. And he says, what does a living human being have to complain about? I mean, what does a living human being have to complain about? I should rejoice in the ability to be devastated. Right? The very fact that I could be devastated, that I could feel such emotions, right, itself should be a glimpse of redemption in my life. Right? That I am, and no one can take that away from me. Right? And I always will be, because I'm one with Hashem. Hashem's one with me. So it's an incredible experience, and that's why Keter is associated with ecstasy. When a person experiences the truth of Hashem as He is so manifest through the attribute of Keter, of crown, of will, of I amness, then that is the highest form of ecstasy. And that's why it says that in the world to come, the tzaddikim, which will be you and I by the time we get there, it's just a question of how long it'll take us to get there, but we're all going to get there. The tzaddikim will be sitting there, neni miziv shechina, they will be in ecstasy. Ecstasy, taking pleasure in the radiance of the divine presence, which is the experience of the godliness within me, the manifestation of Hashem within me, and they will have their crowns on their head. That's what it says, right? They'll be sitting there with the crowns on their head, just grooving. That's not exactly the translation. It's only that. Right? They will be just in the ecstasy of experiencing the mystery of divine I-ness. As Aryeh Kaplan said, the more a person can identify with the true ani, ein ani, the true nothingness, the ultimate sense of I-ness, the more he is in touch with the divine within himself. And that's really what Olam Haba is. What's the big pie in the sky? What is Judaism offering us? It's offering us. That's all it's going to give you. You. Well, but you, in the deepest way, who you are, right? It makes you into the someone, the sum of the one. It enables you to experience yourself as a masterpiece, a piece of the master. Right? And that's it. That's what it gives you. That's what it gives you. Also, I don't want to forget, also, chulent on Shabbat. Also gives you chulent on Shabbat. Okay, but that itself is the greatest marvel, that a person could eat that and still be alive. So there's mysteries. There's lots of mysteries. All right. So let's now look at number two. So it says a person's soul is an actual part of God. This is what Tanya teaches. Now I want you to understand, these ideas I'm sharing with you, there might be rabbis that aren't so comfortable with me sharing these ideas. Just as much as there are rabbis that aren't so comfortable with the complete Hasidic movement. Right? Because this is one of the things that was so challenging. If you start telling people that they're a part of God, who knows what they might do with that? Right? They might start thinking, well, if I'm part of God, right? You have to understand that there's certain traditions whereby the holy man, he realizes he's God. Right? He comes to this realization that he is the incarnation of God. And therefore, he's able to do whatever he wants. Right? So he reads some of these stories, right, which I didn't go reading, but someone sent me to understand what can happen, is some of the lives of, again, some, not all gurus, but some gurus are incredibly lustful, right? Because they feel they have that right. And therefore they have harems of women and there's just no boundaries, there's no borders, because I'm beyond it all. Right? And this was the danger that happened. This happened to a person named Elisha ben Abuya. Elisha ben Abuya, there's a famous story in the Gemara about four rabbis who went to Pardes, went to paradise. Now, you can go there, right? Through meditation. Through meditation, they altered their state of consciousness, and they were able to enter into Pardes. Before they left, Rabbi Akiva said to his traveling partners, when we get to the pure marble, don't say water, water. And they said, okay. So they went off on their journey. One went insane. One died. One became a heretic, and only Rabbi Akiva came back sound, sane, at peace. As I said, he came back in peace. What did they see? Part of what I'm sharing with you is what they saw. When they realized the truth of God's oneness and how one they are with God, well, one went just crazy. He couldn't deal with the contradiction between his physical life, his free choice, and the truth of God, because it's a total paradox. Right? How can the thought in your mind choose to do something that you're not thinking of him doing? Right? And yet on the other hand, we're told that Hashem gave us free choice. So the one went crazy. The other one died, meaning I don't want to go back to the world. Right? I'm staying here. I want to stay in the state of ecstasy. I don't want to be in a world that gives me the sense that I'm cut off from everyone and everything and ultimately cut off from God. I feel that this is where I end. I feel like I'm in this sack of skin. Right? I don't want to go back there. Right? Another came back with Elisha ben Abuya and he became a heretic. What do you mean he became a heretic? He says, I'm above Torah. I don't need mitzvahs. I now am absolved of boundaries and borders. Right? So you know what they called them? They called them Acher. You know what Acher means? The other one. Why did they call him the other one? Because he didn't think he was other than God anymore. He thought he was God. God is him. I am God. This is God. He became a pantheist. God is the universe and the universe is God. Right? And this was those no boundaries, no borders, everything is God. Very dangerous idea. A lot of fun though. But a very dangerous idea. Very dangerous idea. Right? So everyone called him Achir to remind him, you're other, you're not God. Right? You're not God. Only Rabbi Akiva was able to go in and come out at peace. He was able to make peace with paradox. Right? That's what Soloveitchik says. Judaism is not really the path to paradise, but the path to paradox. Right? And that's where paradise is, in paradox. Okay? So, the idea that you're an actual part of God. Okay, you're not God, but you're a part. You're connected. And there's nothing you can say, do, or think that will disconnect you from God, but certainly disconnect you from knowing that you're connected. And then what's the difference, as I told you? If you're colorblind, it doesn't matter. You won't see the colors. It doesn't matter if they're there. It doesn't matter if you're one with Hashem. It doesn't matter if Hashem's completely with you. Right? You don't know it. So let's go to this next piece over here. The fact in eternal joy. This is from Reb Tzadok. And as I share with you, Reb Tzadok was one of the great Hasidic masters. And this is what he says. The purpose and main point of everything. This is number three. The purpose and main point of everything and all that is intended in the entire Torah and 613 mitzvot is to bond through them to the living God. Okay, that we've talked about. Every mitzvah. And again, as I mentioned to you, every mitzvah correlates to a different limb of your body. So that means that limb is getting, so to speak, consciously connected. Okay, and as I mentioned, the Arizal was able to diagnose people, meaning that if there's a mitzvah that I'm neglecting, then that could create a block of life energy, life force, falling into that space, into that limb. Right? Scary idea. And to achieve the truth of the first statement that we heard from the Almighty. What is the point of the mitzvot? It's to bond with Hashem and to achieve the first statement that Hashem said. What did Hashem say at Sinai? Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am God, your God. And all the mitzvot are intended to fulfill that. Right? Now you have to understand what's so interesting about that. Everybody calls it the Ten Commandments. Right? It's a little problematic. Because that first one doesn't sound like a command, does it? I am God, your God, who took you out of Egypt. That's the first commandment. There's no commandment there. That's a statement. That's a fact. And that's the point. The point is Hashem said, this is a fact. Nothing can change it. But what does it mean? Well, it depends how you translate it. If you translate it as, I am God, your God, who took you out of Egypt, okay. But what if we translate it differently? Not, I am God, your God, but I is God, your God, who took you out of Egypt. And simply what Hashem was saying is, the I, God, your God, is the I. The ultimate I, the source of all consciousness, the source of all thinking, the source of all love, right? Am I the source? I'm not the source. Right? But am I connected to the source? I must be. Right? Must be. So the whole goal of Judaism is to experience this truth that Anochi Hashem Elokecha, that the Anochi, the I, is Hashem Elokecha. God, your God, is the I who took you out of Egypt. And all the commandments are there meant to connect you into, plug you into that I. You know, you can appreciate this if you have a Palm Pilot. Got to use technology somehow, right? Because that's the idea of the cradle, right? You take your little palm, you put it in the cradle, and you push, and it synchronizes. Right? And then there's this connection between this little Palm Pilot and your whole computer. That's the whole point. The whole point of Judaism is called hot sink your soul. That's it. That's what it's about. It's hot sinking your soul. Right? It's soul sinking. That sounds bad. Okay. Right. That's the question in your life. To sink or to sink? That is the question. To S-I-N-K or to S-Y-N-C? That's really your choice in life. Either you're going to sink into the depths, right, and feel lost and drowning, or you're going to sink yourself, synchronize your life to the divine life. Synchronize your will to the divine will. Your wisdom to the divine will. Your vision to the divine vision. And the more you synchronize your individual life to the universal life, which is the manifestation of God, then, as I mentioned before, you experience the highest form of ecstasy called feeling groovy. Okay? And you feel groovy. Okay. So, and it said, and you are bonded with the Lord. In other words, all have a connection to this bond. As it stated, a part of God is his people. And I have to say, it's a verse in Deuteronomy. It's not just Hasidus here, you know, it's a verse. Chelek Hashem Amo. Part of God is his people. It's a verse, so you don't have to go as far as mysticism and all that. It's a verse. Chelek Hashem Amo. A part of God is his people. And this is a fact. And nothing you can do can change this. Right? And all the mitzvahs are only enabling you to recognize this basic existential fact that Hashem established. I is God, your God, who took you out of Egypt. You who are bonded to God, not you will be bonded to God, you who are bonded to God. It's a fact. You are bonded to God. Okay? And your choice is to acknowledge this fact and to live a life that expresses and acknowledges that fact. And so, and this, when experiences this truth, this is a source of constant joy for a Jew. Right? For a Jew, that's all we're looking for. Right? Now, this is a constant joy for any human being. Right? But he's talking about what is the teachings of Judaism? What is the source of constant joy for a human being? And that's what goes back to what I said the other day. You know, King Solomon says in Ecclesiastes, he says, you know, of what worth is happiness? And then in another verse he says, I praise happiness. So the Talmud says, well, is happiness good or is happiness bad? So the Gemara says, King Solomon praises happiness of mitzvah. When a person achieves happiness through their mitzvot, right, that's the greatest happiness. But when a person thinks they're going to get happy by hanging out in the disco or getting drunk or getting high or all that, right, that's not true happiness. That won't deliver the goods. You know, it won't deliver the goods. But the ultimate source of happiness is being connected to the ultimate source of happiness and life and wisdom and love. That's it. So, and this is the source of constant joy for a Jew, that he is created and planted within the orchard of the Lord to be glorified through the seed of Jacob. In other words, we are planted in the field of the Lord. The Lord is a field, so to speak. Right? An energy field. Right? Scientists are asking, you know, what is the universe? So now there are those who are talking, it's a field of consciousness. That's not bad. Right? because this would go very well with Judaism. Really, the universe, or actually reality, is a field of consciousness. And you and I are sprouting out of the field of consciousness. Right? We are blossoms of consciousness. We are like, it's the universe, or the reality is like an ocean. And each and every one of us is a wave. And we peak, David Aaron, and we go back into the ocean. And we peak, right? Susan Ackerman. And we go back into the ocean. Right? And that is the ebb and flow of ourselves. We are growing out. So that's the point. You experience yourself planted. Right? You're planted. You're connected. And that's what's so interesting about the human being. This is the root. Right? So our head is planted, so to speak, right, in the heavens. And it's from there that everything is being drawn down into earth. Alright? And so, but not only that, planted within the orchard of the Lord to be glorified through the seed of Jacob. What does Hashem want from you? He wants to be glorified through you. This is a very amazing idea, right? The idea is lehit pa'er, right? Hashem created us lehit pa'er. You know what lehit pa'er means? I can't find a better English translation than to show off. A person who is mit pa'er is basically showing off, right? But of course, not in a bad way, right? But just like showing your colors, you know, letting your light shine. That's why Hashem created us. Right? Because this universe is just Hashem showing off. To who? I guess to himself. But just allowing himself the creative license, right? To just express. Right? To just express. And so that's who you are. And so everything you do, that painting, that poem you wrote, that cake you baked, right? That moment of kindness that you did, all of this is just the spectrum of the divine colors just breaking through each and every one of us. And we're just a prism through which that divine light is seeking to be expressed. So imagine this white light that looks a little boring, you know? So you put it through this prism, all of a sudden, boom, there's a rainbow. Right? You realize that all that color was there all along in that white light. And that's what we are. Every one of us is just another color in the spectrum of Hashem's light. All right. This is a happiness that has no sadness. And nothing can interfere or restrain this happiness. So you're looking for happiness. That's your problem. You're looking for happiness. Looking for happiness is like a person in a cave with a candle looking for light. Right? It's that nuts. Looking for happiness is like looking for your eyeballs. Right? Because happiness is the connection to God. And it's there right now. So what do you need to do? So people think, when I get that, I'll be happy. And when I have this, I'll be happy. And then I'll get that and I'll be happy. Right? And for some reason, a lot of people aren't happy. Right? But what Tzaddik is telling is, happiness is here now. All you got to do is just acknowledge this incredible truth. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I is God, your God. Just acknowledge the truth. Atem Advekim Bashem. You who are bonded. Not who will be bonded. Not who will choose to be bonded. But you who existentially, ontologically, eternally are bonded. Right? And Chelek Hashem Amo. And a part of God is His people. Right? At that point, that's a happiness. No one can take that happiness away from you. Nobody. And I want you to know, this is one of the most amazing stories that so deeply impacted me. I have a friend who was writing a book on righteous women. You know, there's lots of books on about tzaddikim, holy men. But are there holy women? There is one. I'm just joking. Okay. Anyways. So this woman went around and she started interviewing these holy women. So there is a woman in Israel who is known for the ability to channel blessings for fertility. Right? For fertility. Women go to her for blessings for fertility. Right? And what is so unusual about this woman, she never had children. She never had children because she was a medical experimentation in Auschwitz. And therefore, they took away her ability to have children. And this woman, for some reason, has a name for having that ability to pray for people, make that connection, and allow and invite that blessing of fertility to their lives. There are such people, right? So my friend went to meet with this woman, and my friend said that until she met this woman, she thought holiness was something that someone builds up to, right? It's kind of like the peak of this great tower that one must build foundation and floor after floor after floor until you get to that peak. But when I met this woman, I realized that holiness is stripping down to essence. And this woman was just, she was just the naked soul right there. Just so there. So my friend asked this woman, tell me, what was it like in a concentration camp? And the woman said, Auschwitz wasn't so bad. Imagine a person saying, Auschwitz wasn't so bad. So my friend was quite surprised by that response. But then this tzaddikus, this holy woman, says to my friend, can I ask you a question? Now my friend did not grow up in a religious home. Right? She's a bala tshuva. She embraced Judaism much later in her life. So she turned to her, and she knew this about her. She said, can I ask you a question? What was living in a secular society like? How did you survive secular life? So my friend is really shocked by the obvious implication here that this woman is suggesting that secular life is worse than Auschwitz. So my friend tells her, and she says, like, excuse me? Right? And the woman says, I want you to understand something. In Auschwitz, they could get our bodies, but they could never get our souls. But a secular world takes your soul. Right. So that's, what do you got? It's your soul. Right. It's your soul. What do you got? No one can take your soul away unless you give it away. Right. And that's the eternal joy for a Jew, is to be soul. And when you are soul, you know you're someone. You're some of a one. And you know that connection is there. And you know as long as you can do this, and even when you can't do this, and just remember that you used to be able to do this, right? You're connected. Yeah? You're connected. Rav Shlomo Kalbach, I heard an incredible story about a man that they called the Hunchback. I don't remember which concentration camp he was in, but he had decided, he was so devastated. One day, he did something that was not pleasing the Nazis, and they beat him up and broke his back. And so he became a hunchback. And one day, in his pain over his terrible physical state, he decided he was going to end his life. And he was going to throw himself into the electrical wire fence. And just as he was about to end his life, he remembered his Rebbe saying, if you're on earth, there's always something you can do. There's always some way you can help. And so he thought to himself and decided that, no, there's still purpose for my existence if I'm still here. He decided that if all he could do is just be a compassionate ear for other people's pain, that's a good enough reason to live. And so he became known to be the fellow that would sit with everyone and cry with them as they would share their pains of being in Auschwitz. Of course, he himself was in Auschwitz. That's the point. Is there ever a point in my life, right, or even in my death, that I'm disconnected? No. The only problem is, do you know that? Do you remember? And that's what Judaism is about. It's all about just remembering. The soul comes into this world and goes into a state of amnesia. It's all about remembering. Right? It's all it's about. It's just remembering. because it already is. All I have to do is remember that it is. Oh yeah, I forgot. Yeah, this is my kid who I so loved when he was born, and now I'm so angry. Wait a second, let me remember the day he was born. Oh yeah, this is my wife that we look so intensely into each other's eyes when we're under that chuppah. How could we speak this way to each other? How could we forget? And that's it. The key, the Baal Shem Tov says, the secret to redemption is remembering. And the secret to exile is forgetfulness. And as long as you forget who you are, right, and how awesome you are, you throw yourself into exile. Right? And Judaism is all about, it's an exercise of consciousness. Just remembering. Just remembering. I forgot where we are. I'm just joking. Okay. And even if he and she has sunk to a low level and his sins immeasurably numerous, still the connection of his root has not been cut off from its source. It doesn't matter how low life you might think you are, right? It doesn't matter. This is impossible. It's just impossible that you're disconnected. It's just impossible. Now, can you imagine it? As it says, Lo yidach mimeno nidach. There's a verse from Samuel, but God does not take away life. Instead, he devises ways so a banished person may not remain estranged from him. Hashem will never, ever abandon you. Right? And that's what it says in Tehillim. It says, even though my mother and father abandoned me, God will gather me up. Right? That's the only therapy. It's theopy. Right? You need God. That's it. Basically. Right? Even if my mother and father, can you imagine a parent forfeiting their child? That's it. You're such a low life. You're the worst kid in the world. I disown you. Hashem will never disown a person. Never. You could be the greatest, most evil person in the world. Hashem will never disown you. The problem is, you disowned Hashem. Right? What will Hashem then do? As it says in this very important pasuk, but God does not take away life. He will not take away life. But Hashem is devising ways so that a banished person may not remain estranged from him. So everything that's happening in your life, everything that's happening in your life, is Hashem just orchestrating situations for you to wake up to the greatness of who you are and who you're part of. That's all. Just a question of how long does it take? But life is just one big alarm clock. Now I don't want you to get alarmed by that, right? Because this is not an alarming point. The point is that it's just wake up. That's the shofar. It's a wake up call. Right? I'm here, but I'm asleep. Right? And that's a verse in Song of Songs. It says, I am asleep, but my heart is awake. Right? My heart is awake, but I'm disconnected. I'm disconnected. And I've experienced this, you know, in davening. It's the weirdest thing. Sometimes, for those of you who are maybe professional daveners and you even know it by heart, so there's a certain interesting challenge when you know the Amidah, the Shemoneh Esrei, by heart, because suddenly you start just rambling away, you know, because you know it. So you start going, you know, and then your mind is going off into like what happened yesterday in the office, and then suddenly you find yourself in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei, and you go, where am I? Oh yes, I'm davening. Now, but what really hit me one day when I suddenly realized that I do not have kavana, and kavana not only means intention, but it means alignment, lechaven, attuned, right? So one day I kind of wake up in the middle of my, davening, realize that I'm somewhere in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei, and I said, oh man, I haven't been concentrated. But then I thought to myself, well then who was? Because somebody said these words, right? So these words have been coming out of my mouth, and yet I'm not saying these words. So if I didn't say these words, who is saying these words? And isn't that the amazing thing about the soul? How we can become totally disconnected. There's a lower self that is on automatic saying these words, and then there's a self that is floating around over here, and there's a disconnect. Right? So there's this kind of transcendent self that's over here, and then there's this immanent self that's in these words, but there's no connection between the you that's in these words and the you that's outside these words. And that's the goal of life. That there's this interconnection between you within yourself, and then you within God. Right? And that's the alignment. And that's a joy that can never, ever be taken away, no matter how low a person comes. I would say one of the most amazing things I ever heard, right? And Baruch Hashem, Hashem has blessed me to be able to be a vehicle for some of these books. So a woman recently told me that she works in an emergency ward in New York, somewhere in New York. And a young black boy who has a serious drug problem and is homeless came in, and he was holding endless light. He was holding endless light. And she was shocked, because this woman is a student of Israelite. She was shocked. She sees this kid, and he's holding endless light. So, and he was really in a terrible state of mind. Terrible state. It was like really, not because of the state, endless light. That's why he was in emergency. Okay. But anyway, so this kid was like really out of it. Not because of endless light. Right? And so he's holding his book. So this woman says, "Where did you get that book?" Right? So he said, the woman in the shelter gave it to him. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
And she told him that this book would help him. Right? It's an incredible thing. Right? Incredible thing. But that's really the hope. Hashem is our hope. That's the only hope a person ultimately has, is that connection to Hashem. And so when suddenly 12 Steps takes the world by storm, right? And every kind of addiction disorder, people are using 12 Steps. And that the first step is, I have a problem. The second step is, I can't do it alone. And the third step is, there's a higher power that's with me. Right? That's it. That's the power to change. It's the connection to Hashem. Right? It's the connection to Hashem. In fact, I submitted a manuscript that I'm working on, and I called it The Me I Want to Be. And the publisher said, you know, that title will never fly. That's kind of like from the 70s. That's kind of like the, you know, Be Your Best Friend, or I'm Okay, You're Okay, or The Games People Play. It's gone. That's pop psychology titles. Right? People are looking for, today the market is, personal transformation through a connection to God. Right? Right? So that's the subtitle of the book. Right? And I'm thinking of calling it Making Eye Contact. Right? Personal transformation through a connection to God. But that's what it's about. That's what the world is being taken storm by. And Hashem will never let anybody go. Never. Right? He will devise every single way just to get us to wake up. You're a soul. If you knew where your soul, how could you treat yourself that way? How could you do that to yourself? And if you knew the person next to you was a soul, also a shining light of godliness, how could you treat them that way? That's just the basic message of Judaism. Right? But it takes work, right, to get there. Okay. Let's take a 5-minute break, and we'll continue on with number 4.